Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am your host, Matt Anderson, and joining me, as always, is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com.
How are we
How you
doing?
doing? We planned that, by the way. That was completely timed. Now, Alex, how you doing tonight, man?
Doing good and trying to avoid all the raindrops that have been falling here in Columbia today. I can see why baseball moved up that game to a doubleheader on Friday, but it's doing good.
You've been a busy man. I know you're out at 7-on-7. We'll talk about that here a little bit later. But yeah, I mean the rainy Sunday didn't help. We had baseball this past weekend, finally. Finally, also, Alex, we have multiple sports playing all at the same time. We got equestrian, baseball, softball, basketball, a lot of stuff going on, and then football is always in the background. But this past weekend, the Gamecocks did take 2 out of 3 against Northern Kentucky, winning the doubleheader on Friday, both games, but then losing a heartbreaker and a disappointing ending on Saturday to complete that series. Softball is now 7-2 on the season. Outscored their opponents 28 to or 32 to 4, something like that. Only allowed 4 runs over 4 games past weekend. Still top 20 in the country. They're at 16. They might go up this upcoming week. Like we mentioned up top, Alex, you were in Myrtle Beach. We'll talk about that. Golly, looks like Shane Beamer is going to have to replace another coach on his coaching staff with Joe DeCamillis, looking like he's going to end up with the Raiders in the NFL as their special teams coordinator. So we got to dive into that.
Hey,
Start.
we mentioned all the teams that are playing this week, and probably should give a shout out to the South Carolina Equestrian team, who's now taking down back-to-back number one teams, beating Georgia yesterday.
That's why you're the best in the business, Alex, because I was coming back around to that. But
There you
yeah,
go.
the women's
I beat
I mean
you
the
to it.
equestrian team is awesome. They're killing it.
They're doing.
Alex, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I was saying they're doing awesome. It's one. I mean, being back-to-back, highly ranked teams. That's awesome.
Yeah, and look, Alex, I know that you never stop thinking about this, but for some population of Gamecock fans, they're not even thinking about the class of 2027 for Gamecock football recruiting. But the groundwork is being laid right now for spring, summer decisions, spring, summer cutdowns. And so we're going to go position by position because we haven't touched it lately. And we're not going to talk about every player that the Gamecocks have offered, but we are going to say, here's some names to keep in the back of your mind as you think about recruiting and when you see these cutdowns on lists come on. Women's basketball, 25-2 on the season. We'll talk about that win over LSU down in the Bayou last night. Men's basketball team, not as fortunate this past weekend. Both men's and women only played one game. The Gamecocks fell, I think it was by what, 14 last night to Alabama on the road. It was a late tip-off, man. 8:30, those kill me. And as always, 7:45 p.m., Justin Lyles from sportscapvalue.com will be here to talk some college basketball for the week ahead. Alex, I don't know if you've looked at it, but Saturday and this entire week, honestly, this is basketball season, my friend.
I mean, you're starting to get, I mean, we're middle of February now, so March is coming and you're starting to get all these conferences kind of, winded down, get into the big stretch of things. I mean, you had pretty much you had really good games this weekend. I mean, you had the whole craziness in the St. John's Providence game, which was nuts. I mean, but it was a great scheduled Saturday. And as you mentioned, even this week leading into the week, and it's look, if you're a college hoops fan, this is the best time of the year for you.
Yeah, this is when I stay pretty locked in throughout the season, but these are the weekends where I love because I will still be watching all the Gamecock sports that are out there, but we'll touch on it later. But there are some heck of some games coming up, and we're going to start determining bracketology, seeding. And this is the time to start watching college basketball to prep for your bracket challenges, your March Madness challenges with your coworkers, your buddies, where you have those pools. So now's the time to do your research. So make sure you're getting your research in. So obviously we have a lot to talk about tonight. So let's go ahead and get logged in for the Late Night Gamecock Show.
Gonna turn on the late night show. Hear what's going down in Cooktown. Turning on late night show. Yeah, if my cocks will let me down.
Well, welcome back into the show. Again, my name is Matt Anderson. Today is February 15th. We hope that everybody who celebrated Valentine's Day had a great one. I know my wife wanted to kill me because I was watching sports pretty much the entirety of Valentine's weekend. But don't worry. Don't worry. We got out Thursday night. That's the trick, y'all. Go out Thursday night to celebrate Valentine's Day with your loved ones when you don't fight the crowds. You get a nice, relaxing dinner. So it was fantastic. But this weekend on the baseball diamond, y'all, got a little bit out of whack with the weather. I don't think it was favorable for really either team to have to play a doubleheader on Friday and then turn right around and play game three on Saturday at 2 p.m. When all was said and done, you played 27 innings in about 36 hours, maybe less, maybe 28 hours. So a lot of baseball was played. When you look at game one, I thought there were some game one jitters, Alex. And eventually the Gamecocks found ways that with a couple home runs to get a 5-1 win. Game two was gnarly, y'all. Gamecocks found a way. And, you know, maybe you thought, okay, well, two games in a day, they're kind of tired. But, look, Northern Kentucky had the exact same scenario the Gamecocks did. So that's no excuse. But KJ Scobie delivered a walk-off home run in the top of the ninth, and my God, did he ever get a hold of that baseball.
Yeah.
Got out of the yard pretty fast. And then Saturday, look, Saturday was a really ugly one for the Gamecocks. Coach Palmieri mentioned in the post-game press conference that the guys didn't take batting practice on the field. They just worked in the cages. The guys were not ready, and they didn't look ready, Alex. Maybe some tired legs there, but look, these kids have been playing – 3-4 games a day for their entire careers at the prep high school level, especially summer ball. So I don't really think that excuse holds much water unless this team is incredibly soft, which I don't think they are soft as of yet. Maybe that was a coach taking a bullet for the guys who didn't perform that day. But it was ugly. The Gamecocks dropped the game, the final score of 3-2. They had a great chance to win it in the bottom of the ninth, just couldn't get it done. And I know a lot of Gamecock fans are upset at the hero of Friday night, striking out with the bases loaded with a chance to tie to extend the game or win the game in nine, Alex.
Well, you know, the ending to that game three was kind of a story of the season, a story of the weekend for South Cotton, not being able to really score with runners in scoring position, get timely hits with runners in scoring position. And I think they were 4-30, I think was the number. On the weekend, just not good. And yeah, I don't know, Matt, you and I were talking on Friday with Phil on the show and kind of just talking about that's something you wanted to see was when South kind of had those opportunities with guys on second or guys on second and third, find a ball into the gap or find a ball down the line, just find something to get those runners in. And that was something South kind of struggled with last season. And you know, through three games, I know it's only three games in a season, but that it carried over through those first three games.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that the Bach kid played pretty well in games one and two. Obviously, I think that he would have liked to have a chance to, you know, potentially tie that game in the ninth, but he ended up getting on base, I believe, to get to first and left the bases loaded. And look, we'll go ahead and get into some of the negatives here, Alex, and maybe we'll close out with some positives. But, you know, JB asked me a couple weeks ago, you know, what is my one phrase, my one sentence, my one thought on this Gamecock baseball team, what they need to do to be successful. And it was situational hitting. This is something that has really plagued the Gamecocks for a number of years now. When you get a runner over on second, you get runners on second and third, one out, even two outs, y'all. You got to find ways to get those runs across. And, you know, last year there were a lot of times you had one out, runners on second and third, and you couldn't even generate – you know, a pop fly out to the outfield for a sacrifice. And, you know, I like KJ Scobie a lot. I think he's a really, really talented player. I think he's going to be very successful this year, be a key cog on this team. But in that situation, you know, it's one he'd like to have back. When you have the bases loaded, you have a pitcher that's been pretty wild, allowing some walks, a pass ball to advance the runners, and you have a four-pitch strikeout, and strike three is probably 6 to 12 inches off the plate. Yeah. And it's just tough. You know, I think that you know, I don't know if Scobie said anything after. It looks like he was trying to pluck that ball out there and just maybe get, you know, a blooper into, you know, right field, maybe right over the first baseman and just win the game right there. And I'm sure it's a pitch he can hit, but it's not a pitch you want to swing at in that situation. So that hurt the Gamecocks. Team batting average, Alex, when you mentioned 4-for-30 and with runners in scoring position, the team batting average for the weekend was 255. That's not good enough by any stretch of the imagination, especially against a Northern Kentucky team where you saw 13 different pitchers out there. And that's what made game three, in my mind, so disappointing, because when you get to the 11th, 12th, 13th pitcher in a weekend, and it's not an SEC level opponent or a Power Four level opponent, those arms shouldn't beat you. And they did this weekend for South Carolina. It was one of those things where the pitcher wasn't even throwing stinky cheddar. He was just throwing good balls and swings and misses. Gamecocks left 27 men on base this past weekend. That's far too many.
Yeah.
We already talked about, you know, failing to get that tying run to the plate in game three. The Gamecocks just didn't have it Saturday. I will say there were some positives, Alex. Team ERA pitching sits at 3.33. I thought the pitchers did everything they could to keep the Gamecocks in every single game. You know, some errors in the field and, you know, some just questionable decisions from the outfield led to some runs.
I thought from a pitching standpoint, you know, I think you had to like what you saw from Riley Goodman in game one. Like, the pitch count got up a little bit, but, you know, three shutout innings, striking out five in that win in the game one. Then, you know, I thought Josh Gunther did some good things too, striking out seven and four and two innings work on opening day. So, you know, I thought, you know, those two guys really kind of shined, but, you know, the pitching kind of just did obviously enough, but the bats just were not there to, you know, kind of pick up in those moments where either just to produce runs early in innings or just when runners are scoring position.
Yeah, the Gamecock pitching staff had 38 strikeouts versus 16 walks / you know, hit batters. They only hit one batter all weekend. I think you'll take 38 strikeouts over three games. When the other team can't put the ball in play, that's a good thing. The pitchers only gave up 23 hits on the weekend, and only three of those went for extra bases. So the pitching staff did what they needed to do. The Gamecock batters struck out 15 times, so you're only talking about five per game.
Yeah,
and they got on. They drew 15 walks. So
yeah, now you know you'll see more of the pitching staff here in these next 2 days with the game against Wofford tomorrow in Spartanburg, and then Garden Webb on Wednesday. So you'll see more, I guess, of the depth of the pitching staff. You saw obviously a little bit of it this weekend, and you'll see more of it here kind of this weekend. See the midweek starters, see how those going to go, and going into this tournament this week, or not tournament, but the three games this weekend with Army, Navy, and Air Force.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having a Bo Hollins in there pretty much all 27 innings, who really hasn't seen a lot of live pitches in the preseason, and maybe it takes him some time to get up to speed, but that's a guy you want there in the middle of your lineup to drive in runs and get base hits, get doubles, hit home runs. And like we said, it wasn't there. Alex did mention the two midweek games at Wofford and then home versus Gardner-Webb. Then you welcome Army, Navy, and Air Force into Columbia. I'm just going to tell you guys, if you think the noise is already loud, and trust me, on social media and thebigspur.com, the noise is pretty loud right now about this Gamecock baseball team and disappointment. Clemson just handled Army, won all three games by a combined score of 20-2 over the three games. So Clemson's coming on the schedule, and the Gamecocks are going to face them in just two short weeks. So we'll see what matriculates between now and then. But I can promise you that team that started this opening weekend is not a team that would beat Clemson in 2 weeks. And, you know, for a lot of Gamecock baseball fans, that's when the season starts. That's when they decide if they're going to be invested or not. Two games are in Columbia, you know, home at Founders Park and then at Segra Field. And then you go over to Clemson. So maybe you can get that series and kind of reel things in. But we're not going to overreact here, but we will just say that it was ugly baseball this past weekend. Moving on to football, Alex, Shane Beamer is probably going to lose special teams coordinator Joe DeCamillis. So my question to you, Alex, where could Shane look? Camillis is making $850K a year, so you should be able to attract a high-quality candidate. Your thoughts?
I think, yeah, it's obviously going to be an attractive job just because of the importance that Shane Beamer and South kind of puts on special teams. That's to, you know, a lot of these special teams coaches, that's going to be really attractive. And, you know, it's early to say kind of where he turns to, but it's kind of crazy. This coaching cycle just never ends, it seems like. Or the coaching hiring circle just never ends, just because it feels like, you know, every hire South kind of makes, all right, it feels like the staff for 2026 is set. And then the news about Joe DeCamillis going to the Raiders this morning happens. So, you know, that's just, you know, kind of how it goes. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch just because of spring practice being, what, I guess 2 weeks away now, pretty much. It's, you know, it's kind of go time. It's going to be something that you have to imagine Shane Beamer may have had an idea that this could be coming, has already gotten to work on that.
Yeah, I'm not stunned this came. DeCamillis is really an NFL guy through and through. I thought that he did good things for South Carolina from a special team standpoint. Obviously, you know, Pete Limbo is the exception to the rule when it comes to a special teams coach. He's truly special in every yeah. definition of the word, from an off the field, on the field mentor, the way he connected with the players. And that's why he's a head coach right now as well. I think for me, Alex, Shane Beamer obviously has experience coaching special teams. I don't think a head coach should be focused on special teams solely. I think they should have their hands in pretty much everything as far as what's our goals, you know, how are we going to do it? I trust your plan type of thing with the coordinators. I do. Me personally, I don't know if you need to go the NFL route again, unless it's just a slam dunk candidate. You really, recruiting is still a big thing in college football. I think you need to go find a college guy that's had a track record. Like I said, the $850K, who knows if it's more or less for the next guy, but that's a pretty healthy chunk of change that you can probably go get virtually anybody you want in the country at that price range. But remember, special teams is so important because so many of the depth pieces, the guys that are second, third on the depth chart, even some starters are playing in some form or fashion on special teams. So developing them in their roles there leads to success. So it is a very important hire. I know some folks are saying, oh, well, barely knew you. They're probably more frustrated about the field goals than anything else, the missed field goals, Alex. Yeah. But I mean, the lack of ability to convert those. But we'll see who Shane hires. I think it will be a hire. I don't think Shane's going to say he's going to do special teams, but we'll see. It was news that I think I'm not shocked by. I'll put it that way. Alex, quickly, I want to hear about your trip yesterday to Myrtle Beach for 7-on-7. I know there was at least one Gamecock commitment there. Break it all down for us.
Yeah, so it's a kind of a event called the NLG, which is Next Level Great 7-on-7 tournament. They put on some, you know, events around the country. This weekend they were in Myrtle Beach, and there were, you know, one commitment for South Carolina was in there, and Amari Fountain, who's a cornerback out of Atlanta, Georgia. You know, a guy that was really interested to see. It was my first time getting to see him in person. And, you know, what's funny about it is we had him listed at 6'1", 171 pounds. And, you know, I was getting ready to go watch one of his first games, and, you know, somebody walks by me, and I'm like, man, who is that? And I realized it was Amari Fountain. I was like, that dude's not 6'1". And so after kind of watching him and talking to him, he told me he was at 6'3", 190 right now, which is pretty impressive. And I mean, he's a guy that, you know, from kind of played both ways, which isn't, you know, uncommon in these 7-on-7 types of things. But, you know, from a cornerback standpoint, didn't get to see too much just because they play a lot of zone in some of the games I was watching, this 7-on-7 thing. But I had a video up on Twitter I posted of him making a catch at wide receiver and turn up field. He's got some legit speed in there. And I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he told me, you know, he's locked in with South Carolina. He's also had some teams like in Indiana, Ohio State, Texas, Florida, who are still coming after him. But, you know, he's, you know, telling them that he's locked in right now. So was really impressed with what I saw from him. Just, you know, the quickness, kind of a long striding type of guy. You know, I thought, you know, of the guys that I saw yesterday, you know, he was obviously the oldest one because there were some 28s and 29s that I saw. But he was really impressive to me, and a guy that, you know, is kind of a 3-star, 4-star borderline guy right now in the rankings, but could really see that guy, you know, continue to rise in the rankings. You know, saw some in-state guys from a 28 and 29 perspective. A 128 receiver I saw is Teru Davis out of Somerville. You know, a guy that's, you know, around 6', 180 pounds or so. And it'd, you know, kind of be interesting to watch to see where his development goes. He's got, you know, a Virginia Tech offer right now. And, you know, we'll see, you know, I think Wake Forest and East Carolina, some other schools to watch with him. You know, the two guys, you know, two other guys I was really intrigued to see some really from a younger perspective were Corey Miller and Malachi Debnam, who are two wide receivers from the state of South Carolina. Debnam plays at Easley High School, and Miller just transferred from Irmo to Dutch Fork. But Miller, you know, was really, really good. A guy that, you know, from a speed perspective, saw him multiple times take a little drag route and turn it upfield for a touchdown against some really good teams that they were playing in that circuit. And, you know, Dedmon's a guy that's more of just kind of that, you know, tall 6'1", 6'2", type of frame that I think was really impressive too. A guy that can make some deep ball catches from Bear Woods, who I'm sure that name sounds familiar, is Cutter Woods' brother. And Bear, you know, is a 2029 quarterback, and he was getting some hype early on for his rankings and things like that. And, you know, I thought, you know, there's some things there that I did like with him. Just guys, you know, obviously being a 2029 prospect, he's a guy that's just going to continue to get bigger and stronger. But again, with being a 29, that type of stuff's going to come with him. But, you know, a left-handed quarterback, guy that I thought I saw some good things from yesterday. So, you know, that was kind of the main guys that I saw. I saw a few other kind of in-state guys that I'm going to have up on the Big Spur tomorrow morning, kind of an observations piece on what I saw with really everything that I saw or said here today, and then some of these other guys that I saw. But really, you know, I thought the biggest thing I saw was just from Fountain. That was really kind of a standout type of performance I saw from him. Really interested to watch and see where his recruitment goes. Obviously, like I said, being locked in, but just from a ranking standpoint and how he performs at Northside in Atlanta this year. But then just, you know, kind of getting the first look at some of these younger guys in the state. And, you know, 2029 feels like a long way with that class and that cycle. We're still kind of worried about 27 and 28 cycle, but that 29 cycle will be here before you know it. And you know just how early some of these recruitments get started. Miller, by the way, has an offer from South Carolina. Debnam does not right now. But you know, we'll see. You know, I thought it was just good to see those guys early on.
Well, so 6'3", 190 for Fountain. That's a Torian Gray special. I mean, you've seen the Jazavion Currents height and weight. You know what Kendall Daniels is. It looks like confirmed Torian has a type, and he locks in on him early. That's one thing I do really respect about Torian Gray is when he locks on guys as evaluations, he's able to find these kids before they blow up. And we'll see. I know that, you know, there's some hot and heavy rumors about Georgia, obviously in state. We'll see. I mean, the kids commit very, very early. Lately, there's a track record they don't stick, but, you know, be telling Alex and telling the coaches that he's locked in. You give the Gamecocks the upper hand there to hold on to him as of right now.
Yeah, kind of the same recruitment. You know, Cossie Barnes is a little bit later from a recruitment process of when they identified him. But, you know, Cossie Barnes is kind of the same thing. Like they got Torian Gray, identified him really early. South kind of got him commit. And then you saw some other schools like North Carolina really start to push from him. So that's just something that Torian Gray has been really good at, is one, identifying, you know, kind of the talent and has the type that he looks for at corner and at safety. But then they're able to really kind of keep these guys in the class. I think, you know, just the you know, kind of track record that Torian Gray has is something that stands out to these guys.
Yeah, well, we'll see all these 28 and 29 guys. But 2027, Alex, we need to let the folks know who they're tracking. Quarterback looks like there was a kid that Kendall Bryles is pretty high on from his time at TCU. I don't know how much legs that has anymore. I mean, it's a long way to go in that recruitment, but what are your thoughts right now? Quarterbacks commit earliest.
Probably just continue to keep an eye on that. His name is Jerry Meyer III from Waxahachie, Texas. He was committed to TCU with Kendall Bryles, so he was one that, you know, then decommitted, and so that's going to be one to watch, see kind of from a visit standpoint what happens in the spring. And obviously you got the officials and all that to worry about so far, but you know that's kind of the name that I would keep an eye on right now.
Running back, we know the two in-state guys. Tell the folks about them, and if there's anyone else we need to know about.
Yeah, so the two in-state guys have been guys we've been tracking for South Carolina for a long time. David Segarra from Burns, a guy that, you know, I know Matt, you and I have seen a handful of times in these 7-on-7s, and really, really like a guy that, you know, I think, you know, could be a maybe like a Tennessee, Clemson, South Carolina type of battle for him. But I think Stan Drayton with these in-state guys, not only these in-state guys, but another guy I'm going to mention here in a minute that I forgot to mention that I saw yesterday at the 7-on-7. But, you know, I think with Cigar, you know, they got the official visit schedule, and a guy that I really like, along with Aiden Gibson, who's at Woodruff. So they got the two in-state guys who are going to be sending official visits. And, you know, I think they're in a good spot for both, but it's going to be a battle for both of them. Just kind of, you know, finish that, because, you know, Stan Drayton's had to come in and kind of rebuild those relationships that, you know, Markell Blackwell had built with those guys before Stan Drayton got there. And then another guy I want to mention is Braden Tyson, who I saw yesterday, a 6-foot, 235-pound, four-star running back who was at the 7-on-7 yesterday. Guy that's, you know, physically just looks like a guy that can run in between the tackles, and thought he did some good things yesterday out of the backfield. It can be hard from a running back standpoint evaluating these guys just because there's no running the ball. You can only see what they do coming out of the backfield. But he's got an official visit scheduled with South Carolina for May 1st. Same official visit as Mari Fountain. I should have mentioned that. That's the only official visit that Mari Fountain currently has scheduled is to South Carolina. Tyson will be in May 1st, and he's also got Miami and Florida State official visits there. So just one where I think, you know, you can kind of shoot your shot if you're South Carolina and see what you can do there.
A wide receiver and tight end, Alex, I don't know how big this class will ultimately get, among the pass catchers. Tight end, I definitely think they need a body or two, at least one, maybe as many as two or three. Wide receiver, I don't know what Kendall Briles' thought process is there right now. I don't know if it's going to be let's grow them from freshman all the way up, or if you want to go, you know, find that guy that just fits your system to a T in the transfer portal. But Gamecocks obviously only took one wide receiver last year in the recruiting class, did pick up some in the transfer portal. But as we know, when you come from the transfer portal, you have limited years left. So what are we looking at wide receiver and tight end?
At wide receiver, I think two names that I'm really keeping an eye on, and both of these guys have official visits, are Jaden Kelly Murray, who's at Somerville last year, and he'll be at Oceanside Collegiate next year. He's got an official visit schedule, and a guy that I think he's got a chance to be really good. 5'10", 170 pounds. That's what we have him listed at right now. I'd be interested to kind of get an updated measurement on him. But a guy that I'm really intrigued with. And also Ivion Lewis, who's at Huguenot in Richmond, Virginia, a three-star receiver that South Carolina's quietly kind of been involved with and got an official visit schedule. So with these guys, and we'll say when they schedule an official visit, that's kind of something where, you know, you get your shot with them. And you saw that last year with some of these guys that South Carolina got their shot with and got. So that's kind of two. And another one to maybe keep an eye on is Christian Jackson, who's an in-state receiver out of Ridgeview. He's South Carolina's got an offer, but kind of interested to see where things are with South Carolina. Then at tight end, you know, it's kind of one I'm still figuring out, see where the board's kind of shaping up for tight end South Carolina. Malik Howard's a guy maybe keep an eye on out of Oak Ridge, a four-star wide receiver, or a four-star tight end, top 50 guy. So kind of still figuring out that tight end board, but I think he's been one to watch. And that tight end board always kind of, you know, blooms late too. You see some guys in these summer camps who maybe kind of, you know, show up in surprise and do really well, then quickly set official visits, not only at a tight end position, but you'll see that at corner or any position. So that's another one that I just kind of keep an eye on from a position standpoint.
Well, offensive line, I know that there was a big stir last week, Alex, with Maxwell Hiller, I believe, and the other kid that committed to Kentucky. With Maxwell Hiller releasing a top four and the Gamecocks weren't in it. Personally, things behind the scenes that I've heard about, I thought the Gamecocks would probably be in a top four, top five, if not a bit higher. But it looks like with Hiller, Gamecocks aren't really out of it yet.
Yeah, I was a little surprised when, I think that was maybe 2 weeks ago or so, when his top five came out, or top four, whatever it was, came out, and South Carolina didn't have a spot. And because he had originally scheduled an official visit with South Carolina, the first one that he had, publicly announced that he was going to take. So that was a little bit surprised, but I think it's one still to kind of track, and, you know, we'll see kind of how that goes down the road. And a few other names. Nate Carson's the one that's going to be one to watch. I know everybody probably knows that name from Irmo. Four-star guy, offensive tackle that, you know, South Carolina's bet on Alabama, Tennessee for. But, you know, I think Randy Clements and those guys have done a pretty good job. And Sam Survey, guys like that, guys have come in and done a pretty good job of building that relationship and kind of, you know, I guess, building the relationship post Lonnie Teasley. Junior Saunders is another guy, offensive tackle, who's got an official visit scheduled. I think that's one too where, you know, Ty Johnson's another offensive tackle. And at these offensive line spots, that's one where you've seen some more offers go out to a guy like a Bryson Hurt from an interior offensive lineman from Gainesville. You know, Ronald Trey Moore could be another one to watch. Will Endicott from Prosper, Texas was a new offer. Kendreas Jones. You've seen that offensive line board kind of expand and they, you know, have thrown out some offers there recently. So I think that's another board that will kind of continue to build itself out. But, you know, I'd say Nate Carson, Junior Saunders are two guys, especially at the tackle spot, to continue watching.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what the Gamecocks do at offensive line this year because, look, there's going to be a lot of opportunity next year for whoever's on the roster at offensive line. When you bring in seven offensive linemen from the transfer portal, maybe even eight, I can't remember what the final number was. Eight. And most of them have 1 year left, if not all of them. It's a room you got to continue to build, however you can.
Yeah, from a number standpoint, it's going to be interesting just because of a lot of those guys that you brought in from a transfer standpoint are one-year types of guys. Now you got guys like a Hank Purvis who've got another year, guys like that who still have some more years left. But then you got your freshmen, Zion Giles, Anthony Baxter, and Darius Gray who got some time. still eligibility wise and a few other returners. But this is a room that, you know, you need more than just, you know, six or seven guys in that room. And, you know, so I think, you know, it, from a number of standpoint, it will be interesting to watch, because I think at offensive line, you can't pass up too many. Like, I think you just, the more the merrier in that room is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the number used to be 5 to 7 offensive linemen in a recruiting class. That's where coaching staffs wanted to be. And you hope that you hit on 3 of them, maybe 4 of them, to make sure you had that rotation of 15 to 16 every year.
Now, but now you got to remember about keeping spots open for transfer portal guys too, because you're going to need some, you would think, next year just from the guys that are going to be leaving.
Yeah, honestly, if I was a head coach and I could find a way to lock in stud offensive linemen year over year, I might allocate – I'm not even joking, Alex. I might allocate like 50% of my budget to it. Like, so everything starts with the offensive line.
It is so important, as we've seen, that offensive line position, plus just how much you need from us. It really, you can say both lines of scrimmage, just to be honest, just from a starting standpoint, what you need, and then to build the room out with depth.
Yeah, so that's the offensive side of the ball as far as prospects are concerned. Next week, we'll hit the defensive side of the ball. And look, these things, official visits are going to be coming down the pipeline soon. I will say, anybody that's committed elsewhere right now, just keep an eye on them, because, I mean, the track records are showing now, if you commit, you know, with this early, but, you know, before even, you know, summertime rolls around, when you start going on visits and your team starts going different places and camps, a lot of things can change. I mean, we started hearing about Zion Ealy last year at summer camp. So yeah, just don't lock everything in, as far as, you know, where don't give up on kids, right? They could still come back around and flip. Nope. I mean, Gamecocks have a handful out there that they're still aggressively recruiting as if they were uncommitted.
Yeah, and to that point, guys that, you know, they're still, you know, recruiting who are committed elsewhere. But then there's going to be guys like we talked about with Akasi Barnes, who just pop out of nowhere, pop up late spring and kind of get in for an official bid in the summer and things go like that. So there are going to be names that we're not talking about now that we're probably going to be heavily talking about from a, you know, just a South kind of offering standpoint, but guys who can continue to rise the rankings. I mean, Julian Walker, you can throw him in the same thing too.
Absolutely. And we'll move on to basketball now, Alex. The women played, in my opinion, what is very likely going to be the toughest environment they'll play in the rest of the season as far as a road environment. I'm not talking about just talent. Talent's, you know, the talent on the other sideline or other baseline is its own thing. And the Gamecocks probably won't be tested again until maybe the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and the SEC Championship tournament, if they get there to the championship. But that was a rowdy environment last night, Alex. The women were down 5 at the end of the first quarter, scraped away, got a 1-point lead at halftime, built it just a little bit after the end of the third quarter, and then just held on like crazy to get that win. I was very impressed with them. The two Johnson, Tessa and Raven, they played. That's why guards matter, y'all. Like, that is why guards matter. And I came away just impressed, Alex.
Yeah, Tessa Johnson with 21 points, 4-5 from 3, 8-13 from the field. But, you know, Raven Johnson had 19 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 8-10 from the free throw line. And you could hear Dawn Staley talk about Raven Johnson post-game with ESPN, just called her a winner and how much she's going to miss her when she's gone. And you can see that, because when there are times where that crowd was getting rowdy, when LSU was making their run, and there'd be moments where they just pass the ball to Raven Johnson and she would calm down the offense, get them into a set, and then things would go from there. But, you know, I thought Medina Okot was pretty big too, late in the game, getting some big rebounds, getting some big putback types of things.
Two free throws at the end.
Yeah. I mean, just huge, huge performances. And that's something with this team being an older team, and they've been in these moments before where having to hit 2 free throws in clutch moments aren't a surprise to them, or the moments are not too big for them. And you saw that with really everybody on that team. They just made big plays in big moments. As Steve Spurrier said, big-time players make big-time plays in big-time moments. And you saw that last night from South Carolina.
Yeah, and you know, I think it really shows the potential of this team and what they can still accomplish, because Joyce Edwards didn't have her best game. Right. I think it was 10 points and 1 rebound. I know when I was watching a little bit of the early part of halftime of the men's game, the female announcer that was on the halftime show said that the Gamecocks were 1 of 14 or something like that from layups in that first quarter, first half. And so when that's not working for you, those are a lot of points left on the board. I will say the last, you know, 5 minutes of that game got pretty testy. I do think that South Carolina, And look, refs are going to do this. I think South Carolina got the benefit of the doubt from the referees with that ball going off of the LSU girl's hand when she knocked it out of the Gamecock player's hand on an offensive rebound. And look, video evidence showed that it was off LSU. But, you know, outside of that, I don't think the refs called it on the court where it was favoring the Gamecocks. I think LSU was getting away with a lot of pushing, you know, physical defense, and that was the entire game. But to overcome that and still find a way to win. I mean, LSU had a chance to take the lead in the, you know, the last minute of the game. They had three or four straight offensive rebounds that just didn't go in. Sometimes God just smiles on the Gamecocks, as also Steve Spurrier would say. Look, that's a win you build off of. This team's rounding into shape. I'm not going to be surprised at all if they're holding the trophy and cutting down the nets in the season.
Yeah, and they got a little bit of help from a standing standpoint today, too, with Vanderbilt losing to Georgia. So with four games kind of left to go, they're in a really good spot. And not that this is much of a surprise for South Carolina anymore, but you know, in a really good spot for that regular season title, number one seed going into the SEC tournament.
Yeah, and you flip over to the men, and the men have now lost six consecutive SEC games. They're 11-14 on the season, 2-10 in SEC play. You know, looking at this Alabama game, I thought that the Gamecocks would have to make double-digit threes to have a chance, honestly. But Alabama made 14. The Gamecocks made 7. That's a 21-point difference right there. The Gamecocks lost by 14. So who knows what could have happened if the Gamecocks, in the story of their season, had gotten more of those three balls to drop. But just understand, that's what Bama does. Bama's going to shoot 30, 35 threes a game, and they're going to make every bit of 14, 15 of them. They're now averaging, I think it's like 14 and a half made threes a game over their last six. And look, Gamecocks just didn't have the horses. And Alex, I know you were driving for a lot of it, so you didn't get to see a lot of it when you're coming back from the Myrtle Beach game. But when Alabama's getting the ball up the court in 5 seconds and shooting a three in rhythm, that's what they do. And South Carolina just doesn't have the athletes to compete with that.
And I was listening to Derek Scott and Casey Manning on the game on the Gamecock Sports Network, and it sounded like every time South Carolina had a missed shot, it was Alabama grabbing it, going down the court, and then an open three. And you got to give credit to Alabama when they get those open threes; they're going in most of the time. Like you know, there's some you can just see that happening, and they take advantage of things. When Alabama's on defense, they take advantage of things that offense does. Where if you get a long rebound type thing or bad shots, they're going to take advantage of those bad shots, and they're going to go down there and make threes. And that's how they kind of push games away from you. And that was, you know, one of the differences last night.
I thought that, you know, the Gamecocks played about as well as they could have in that environment, in that situation. The Gamecocks did have chances. They cut it to single digits multiple times in the second half. I think they got it maybe as close as 8, maybe even 6 over the, you know, the last little bit of the second half.
Yeah, there was a key stretch there where they got it within single digits, and there was a quick swing where, you know, a corner three, I can't remember who had the corner three. There was a missed corner three that would have brought it to like a 5-point game.
It was Miles Studi.
That would have brought it down to a two-possession type of game. It was a miss, and it was one of those, like I just said, where Alabama got it, took it the other way, made it three, and it was kind of it from there, where that's how quickly those 6-point swings can really hurt you.
And I will say this, you know, Alabama does what Alabama does. If I was Nate Oates, I would have been slowing that game down when it got to 10, 11 points. But they were still jacking threes and giving the Gamecocks an opportunity. Gamecocks got out-rebounded 43-29. So it's always tough when you get out-rebounded by double digits. However, the Gamecocks did hold Alabama to 8 offensive rebounds. So maybe you see something good happening there. Like I said, Alabama's a top 20 team in the country for sure. The Gamecocks have traditionally, under Lamont Paris, not matched up well with Alabama at all. Alabama's responsible for a couple of those 30, 40-point burgers. So to see them only lose by 14, I think that's kind of a good sign. But, you know, South Carolina, they travel to Gainesville on Tuesday. That game is going to be a 20, 25-point spread guaranteed. That one's not going to be pretty. But Saturday, they welcome Mississippi State to Colonial Life Arena. I think that's a game the Gamecocks can maybe get. But looking at the rest of the schedule, Alex, I really think there's only like 2 winnable games the rest of the way. So the Gamecocks at best are going to be looking at another 2-4 win SEC record. That just leaves you to wonder what's going to happen with Lamont Paris, because that seat is going to be white hot.
Yeah, when you look at the remaining schedule, obviously you mentioned Florida coming up on Tuesday. Mississippi State, you get, you know, two teams that are down there with you here on the in the standings, and Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Mississippi State on Saturday, and then Ole Miss to end the season in Oxford. Two teams that have kind of struggled this year, so you get those two, but it's still not, obviously, you know, if you, even if you get those two wins, that's still not going to be enough to, you know, kind of turn things around. Obviously, it's just going to be interesting to watch here to see where the team's at here going into SEC tournament.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot about Lamont Paris when, if the time comes. I mean, like I said, that seat's going to be white hot. I don't know what Jeremiah Donati is going to do. I don't know if he's going to make a move. Right now, I would lean towards Lamont Paris being back next year. That seems to be the Donati model and throwing more money at the program. I think that the Gamecocks need $10+ million in NIL just to be competitive in the SEC. And then you still got to pick the right players. Bring the right guys in, keep the right players, manage that roster. If they don't have that, I mean, Paris is dead on arrival next year. They're going to have to do something, whether it's a new coach or an old coach. I will say that Lamont Paris has had good game plans. Sometimes they're just completely outclassed from the jump and there's really nothing he can do. But, you know, you go back to that first Florida game before the game just got completely out of hand. I thought it was a good defensive game plan. Those threes didn't drop early in the game, and Florida went on that run, got to 10, got to the danger zone, and then it was 20, then it was 30, then it was 40, and almost 50. So we'll see. But, I mean, this roster is not – it doesn't matter who the coach is. This is not going to be better until there's more money thrown at it, just to be honest, because that's the name of the game in the SEC, and they've got to get the athletes. So we'll see what happens with Lamont Paris. I don't think he'll be fired before the season's over, if any of you are hoping for that. I think it would be after the SEC tournament. And then if it happens, Alex, I don't think there needs to be a rush, because if you fire somebody at the end of the conference basketball tournament, you have plenty of time to gauge interest. Yeah. Some of these coaches that you want are still going to be playing in the NCAA tournament. These deals usually happen pretty quickly. You want to have somebody in place by the Final Four, for sure. And a lot of times you'll see a lot of these announcements come Final Four weekend when there's a lot of coverage on the sport and a lot of eyeballs, but we'll see what happens. We won't know until we know. And I promise Alex and I will be here to talk about it one way or the other. We'll give coach our recommendations if he's interested. I doubt he is, but we'll talk about it, and then we'll analyze the transfer portal, all that. We're still here for basketball. You know, I love it, but we're going to go ahead and hit a quick sponsor break. When we come back, we'll have Justin Lyles from sportscapvalue.com.
Morning, Carl. Usual.
Yeah.
Your eldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
You might as well give me one of those Carolina cards while you're at it.
I knew I'd like that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, Freddy.
You bet.
J.C. Sherbert here. Had a brilliant idea that some good friends of mine in Florence have told me about. Next time you're having a wedding or an event or anytime you got to feed a bunch of people, talk to my friends over at Flavortown Eats and Events. That's right. It's a food truck / trailer. Prepares the food fresh on site right there for you. No hassle. It's absolutely delicious. They'll come out, turnkey solution to feed the masses at your event. Go to their website right now. FlavortownFlow.com. That's FlavortownFlow.com. They have all the contact information you need, and they are a proud sponsor of the Late Night Gamecock Show and the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton, and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
This is the Late Night Gamecock Show with the pride of Hampton County, Alex Jones. And with the king of late night, Matt Anderson. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome back into the Late Night Gamecock Show. Again, it is Sunday, February 15th. We hope everyone had a good Valentine's Day. We're going to bring in Justin Lyles of SportsCapValue.com. Remember, you can go to SportsCapValue.com, enter the promo code Gamecocks, and you is it Gamecock or Gamecocks?
Gamecock.
So, okay, Gamecock.
Yeah.
And you'll get 3 free days. I did it, and if I was a gambler, I would have won a heck of a lot of money. So I hope that you folks do take advantage of it. This is the best time of the year. So, Justin, man, first off, how you doing?
Good. How are y'all doing? I know it's either the end of a week or beginning of the week or transition or what we call it, but we're doing pretty good.
It's something because next week is, I guess, winter break. So it's definitely a transition into something, Justin. But yeah, how about I think Colin Morikawa got it done today on PGA. How did your PGA card look this week?
Yeah, we were on four guys. We fortunately to get one of the guys with the top 10. Hisatuni, which is one of the Asian guys. He actually holed out for an eagle on the last hole to get us into that top 10. We were on Ashke, who was leading going into the final round today with a 2-shot lead and just was pretty flat, and I think he ended up shooting even par and did not win. Like you said, Morikawa coming from behind. So we're in a good spot. Some really good tournaments coming up as we're, you know, right at 2 months, give or take, from the biggest tournament of it all down the street in Augusta.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And, look, I'm telling you, I mean, Scottie Scheffler's already on another planet. He was on another planet today. If he can figure out Thursdays, man – oh my gosh! Like yeah. he might win 80% of them.
He doesn't have to figure out Thursdays. He just yeah. I mean, he gets it done in 3 days.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Some guys were like, "Well, he made like he had 3 eagles today, which is crazy in one round, but he had 3 pars." And I was like, "I'm not really that caught off guard by the pars. I'm caught off by the fact that he had 3 bogeys and still shot 63. which is wild.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Well." Real quick, we want to get your thoughts before we get into the picks here. Baseball, man, I know I watched all 27 innings. I know Alex got to watch 18 of them and got hit or miss there while he was covering that 7-on-7. How many innings did you watch, and what are your thoughts?
I didn't watch a whole lot of baseball. I tried to lay back, lay low for the first couple weekends and see how this team is, and college baseball for that matter. But obviously 2 out of 3. You're hoping for a sweep. You didn't get that with a less than stellar opponent you're playing to kind of kick off the season. But 2-1, you'll see how they respond going forward.
Yeah, and then basketball last night. I did my little pregame show or little 2-minute video. I thought Alabama was going to cover. I thought Alabama had multiple opportunities too. I don't know if the over-under hit, whatever it was. I think it was like 168.5. I'd have to go back and look at the score. I would imagine the over hit. I was leaning under, so I think I went over too. But I thought the Gamecocks showed some resiliency last night. I thought that they could have really let that game get away from them multiple times, and they didn't. But, from a gambling perspective, I think I'd still say fade the Gamecocks.
Yeah, I watched the whole game, and, what I take away from it is I'm really not that disappointed. I mean, you're talking about two different teams on the court here, and it's just – it goes back to what I say. We just don't pass the eye test from an athleticism, perspective of is this a tournament team or not. Obviously, the record shows that we're not. But, Alabama just gets up and down the court so fast. And I thought, the fact that South Carolina covered, they only lost by 14. I thought they played pretty well, all things considered. And Alabama probably struggled really in the second half. I mean, they really had an opportunity to blow South Carolina out up 13.5 and then – got to give South Carolina a little bit of credit. Michi was kind of hot there, a little, kind of getting what he wanted at will. And next thing you know, they cut it below 10. And then you say, well, maybe they can backdoor this thing and maybe have a chance there at the end. But Alabama was just too strong at the end, and you tip their cap to them.
Yeah, you definitely do. I was just saying, I don't know if you caught it at the beginning, but, you know, this is when college basketball really heats up after the Super Bowl. You have college baseball. That's really the only thing going on outside of women's basketball. So it is college basketball time. I'm excited for this week of hoops. I mean, I sent you guys like all the SEC games, and I picked out some non-SEC games as well. And I could have honestly picked out 15 more if we had enough time for it. There's just a lot of good games. We're going to hit at least 10 of them, y'all. And if you have anyone that you want, if you have a game you want us to talk about in here, we'll try and find it for you. But starting off tomorrow night, man, Houston at Iowa State. Iowa State is a 3-point favorite. The over-under is 137. That's what happens when you play Houston. You get a low over-under. Yeah. But, man, I'm so impressed by Houston. I still am. I mean, I'm telling you, I looked at their future the other day. They were plus 750 to win it all, and that number seems right to me. But, yeah, let's talk about this Houston-Iowa State game. Obviously, Iowa State split, but then demolished Kansas on Saturday.
Yeah, Iowa State is really good at home. This is a tough spot, I think, for Houston. Yes, I agree with you, Matt. Houston is as good as anybody and can win this whole thing. Obviously, they go to the final last year and lose. But Iowa State is that team that you got to watch out for. You know, they've been really a really good, solid program for many years now. Hadn't seen them really make a run in the tournament, which is a little surprising. But for this game on a Monday night, I like Iowa State in this situation.
Alex?
Yeah, that's where I'm going, Iowa State.
Yeah, for me, I like Houston a lot. I really do. But Houston really hasn't been tested by a team on their caliber in a number of weeks. They might have had like one real test, and they've kind of coasted through the rest of it. Houston has a pretty big week. There's another game down here we're going to talk about with Houston as well when Arizona comes to town. So no rest for the weary. I definitely see Houston losing one of these next two. Not sure which one it is. So I'm going to take Iowa State -3 because if I think they're going to lose one of them, then I might as well take the favorite. And spoiler alert, I'll probably do it a little bit later on when they play Arizona as well. But, yeah, so we're all in agreement there. Tuesday is a pretty big day, man. Don't look now, but Purdue is playing some really good basketball on both ends of the floor. You know, despite that game against, who was it this week?
Nebraska,
where they had Nebraska just dead to right and let them come back in. They pulled it out in overtime. But Michigan at Purdue, Michigan is going to be the number one team in the country again next week, I would imagine. They were a 2-point favorite on the road at Purdue with an over-under of 154. Alex, start with you.
I'm going under. Michigan's a really good defense. Purdue's, as you mentioned, playing well on both sides of the ball. I'm going under.
Yeah, I was going to say the under as well, and I'm going to pick a side here. I kind of like Michigan. I think Michigan's really good, and I just like them in this spot. I know they're on the road, and Purdue's a tough spot to play, but I'm going with Michigan as well.
I think I saw something where Michigan has beaten X amount of Power Four teams by 30-plus this year. They're just annihilating people. I think that I'm gonna take Michigan -2 here as well. I'll be pulling for Purdue. I really like that team. And it all starts with Braden, their point guard. That kid is so good at basketball. But, yeah, I'll take Michigan -2, but wouldn't be hurt at all if Purdue won that one. The next one on our list is South Carolina at Florida. When we're looking at these lines, just a reminder, we're looking at KenPom. And KenPom has Florida as a 21-point favorite over-under of 149. Justin, I'll start with you here. Does Florida cover the 21 at home against South Carolina?
I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to take the over 149.
Okay.
I would lean the same, especially on the over. I'm going over 149.
So you're pretty much saying that Florida's going to score 100?
I think Florida will hit the 80s pretty easily, and I could see South Carolina in the 60s. So, I mean, that puts you right over the 150-something.
You guys are going to think I'm crazy here, but I think KenPom's going to have us at 21. I think this line's going to get up to 24, 25. I think that's where it's actually going to open on Tuesday, maybe, you know, late Monday night. If it gets to 24-25, I'm going to take the Gamecocks to cover. And it's only because couple reasons. I thought South Carolina had a good defensive game plan against Florida, maybe seeing them one time and then just getting absolutely punked will put a little pep in their step. And number two, I think Florida's on cruise control. I don't think that they're going to try and run up the score. They're established now. I don't care about their six losses that happened earlier in the season. This team is one of the top five teams in the country, if not the best team in the country right now. So I don't know if they'll really try to push the score. I could see South Carolina backdooring this one. As far as the over-under, if I think South Carolina can backdoor it, I'm going to take the over 149 here. So staying in the SEC, this is a big matchup. Georgia at Kentucky. Georgia needs to find some more wins here, and Kentucky has been so hit or miss. They've been so good at home, but they've lost on the road. KenPom has this Kentucky -7 with an over-under of 163. I'll start because I haven't started yet. I think Georgia is one of those teams in the SEC that their offense is good enough to play with Kentucky. I think their athletes are good enough to play with Kentucky, and knowing that they need to start getting some wins, I like Georgia to cover the spread, and I would not be surprised if Georgia wins outright.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go Kentucky covers 7. I just think Georgia does need wins, but you know, it just feels like it's one of those games where Kentucky's going to just have one of those games where they just play really well and everybody cover that 7.
Yeah, this is a Georgia and Kentucky. I don't know what to make of these two teams. Like, this is probably a stay away from me. If I had to pick, you had my, you know, press my head to the floor, I'd probably say Georgia just because of so many points. But this over, I'm looking at this 163. I'm watching that and see if it goes up into the 160s. And if it does, I'm going to take the under. But at 163, I like the over.
Yeah, that's a lot of points. But, you know, both these teams can do it and they can get out and run too, which helps with the overs. The next one we're saying the SEC as well. This game is still on Tuesday. So we got a lot of Tuesday SEC hoops here. Four games in total. Arkansas at Alabama. Alabama's favored by 3. You want to talk about a high over-under? One's at 181. So you're talking about 90 points each potentially in this game with such a narrow spread. Alex, I'll start with you. Arkansas has been pretty good at home, hit or miss on the road, kind of like Kentucky. But, man, when they're on, they're on.
I want to take the under just because 181 is just an insane number. But at the same time with these two offenses, I wouldn't be surprised if they get that number. I'm going to go Arkansas here. I think Arkansas finds a way. They're just playing – I mean, Acuff at point guard is just so good, and they're so athletic and kind of play a little bit the same as Alabama where they – you know, their momentum team. When they get that momentum, they really get going. And I'm going to go Arkansas here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Arkansas. I really like Arkansas to make a run this year too. I think they're just – I know they went to the Sweet 16 last year, but I think they're much better than they were last year. I think Calipari's got them somewhat clicking, and I think they're going to be rolling at the right time. I think this is a good spot for them. Give me the points with Arkansas.
Make it 3 for 3. I'm going to take Arkansas plus the points, especially if it's 3. And the one thing I will say about Alabama is they have had issues with post defense before Charles Bediaco came back to college basketball for a quick minute. I like Arkansas, and look, I'm not doubting Arkansas making a Final Four run at all, because let's not forget early in the season, they only lost to Duke by 8, and Duke's proved to be one of the best teams in the country. Moving on to Saturday. Saturday is a big day, y'all. I'm very excited for Saturday. And we'll start off with what has to be the game of the day. And it's Michigan at Duke, so it's going to be in Cameron Indoor. Michigan is a 2-point favorite in this game, and the over-under of 148. If I have to start here, I'm going to go under 148 in this one. I think this is going to be a grinded out, possessions matter. I think there's going to be some jittery butts in this one, and I probably would take it's going to sound crazy being in Cameron, but Michigan -2 because – Duke relies so much on young players.
Go ahead, Alex.
I'll go Duke. I just think the Boozer is just really, really good. At Cameron Indoor, I can't go against them at Cameron Indoor.
Yeah, I think it's a screaming for people to take Duke. I'm going to take Michigan here. I just think the Michigan's loaded. I mean, what a story with the May coach coming from Florida Atlantic now to Michigan, and there's no value on them to win a national title just because they're so high up and they're going to be the number one team. But I like them in this spot.
Yeah, I agree with you. The next one's another banger, y'all. I mentioned it was a big week for Houston. Arizona at Houston. Arizona at Houston. Arizona has now dropped two in a row. And, you know, Texas Tech is a team that's pretty good. Kansas at the time was playing as good as anybody in the country. I still don't see how Arizona lost that game to Kansas, but they did. And sometimes tight butt syndrome is a real thing in college basketball, and it was. It was pretty crazy to watch. But in this game, it's again Arizona at Houston. Houston is a 1-point favorite, over under of 143. I'm going to go back on my word. I'm going to take Houston to lose to Iowa State, but I'm going to take Houston minus one. And the reason is I think Arizona has been figured out just a little bit. And when you have a team like Houston that's known for being stellar defensively, it's at home. I think Houston will do just enough to get the win, but it's going to be a barn burner. Oh, the over-under is 143.
You took the words right out of my mouth of the Arizona part of that. Houston at home, the way they play defense, I'm going Houston there.
Yeah, I like Houston too. They're tough at home. Arizona's a lot like Iowa State. Like, they're really good in the regular season, but then they don't make a run in the postseason. I don't know why, but I just don't trust them enough yet until they prove it. Give me Houston.
Yep. All right, we got to go fast here, guys. We only got three more on the docket. We'll go ahead at the Mississippi State at South Carolina game. South Carolina minus two, over under 146. I would be smashing the over here. I think both these teams are going to realize they can actually score against each other as opposed to other SEC games that they play. And I'll take the Gamecocks to win. Then the Gamecocks are due.
Same here.
I'm going to take Mississippi State. I'm going to take the over.
Yep. Tennessee at Vanderbilt. Woo, what a good one here. Like I said, Tennessee at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's a 5-point favorite, over under of 149. Ooh, Justin, what do you think about this one?
I like the over here. I like Vanderbilt at home.
Yeah, I'd go over and Vanderbilt as well.
I'm going to take Tennessee plus the five. I think that Vanderbilt can be hit or miss. I love Vanderbilt as a team. I think they're they can make a Final Four run too. But the thing is, I think Tennessee can as well. The last game we're going to talk about before we make way for the SEC Sunday night boys, Kentucky at Auburn. We talk about big weeks, and this is what it's like right now for teams that are in the SEC. Kentucky at Auburn. Auburn is a 3-point favorite, over-under of 157.
I'm going Kentucky here. Keyshawn Hall is out indefinitely for Auburn. He's a big part for them. I'm going Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm taking the points with Kentucky as well.
Yeah, I don't think this one will end up being Kentucky favorite, by the way. I'll take Kentucky to cover. I don't know about that 157, but like we said, this is a huge week in college basketball. Start getting your bracket research done. Get your pools. Maybe we'll set up an ESPN page where y'all can come play against us, and we'll have a major, major episode on Sunday night when the bracket's revealed, and then we'll pick all our games as well. We'll have a special guest with us there on that show. We'll probably do it Tuesday night after we get the brackets, get some time to marinate on it. But, Justin, tell everybody where they can find you and how to take advantage of that promotion you have running for us.
Yeah, sportscapvalue.com. Gamecock is the code, all caps. Just plug it in when you sign up. We've got all the major sports, college basketball, NBA will be back on Thursday with the regular season. And then, like I said, with the golf going on, big tournaments coming up leading all the way up to Augusta. So a lot of money to be made there.
Absolutely. Well, Justin, man, we appreciate your time as always. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Y'all have a good week.
Yep.
Thanks, Justin.
All right, Alex, appreciate you as always. I think we covered a lot on this show. We really maximize our hour.
We talked about equestrian. We talked about baseball. We talked about basketball, not only South Carolina basketball, but NCAA basketball in the week that's coming. I mean, it was a full show.
It absolutely was. Well, Alex, hope you have a great rest of the week. We'll be excited for all the articles you're going to be pumping out this week on thebigspur.com. And thank you to everyone who joined us tonight. When you spend your time with us, you give us the most valuable thing you have. So thank you to all of you, and we will catch you Sunday night. Talk to everybody soon. Bye.